What's up, everyone? I'm Nick Marty, and you're now tuned in to Popcorn Talk on AfterBuzz TV. We have director and co-writer of Wildling, so stay tuned.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's I Talk Movies.
What's up, everyone? Thank you so much for tuning in. We have very talented guests with directorial debut, Fritz Bohm, in the building. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, first thing is, you know, the film was actually really amazing. Josh sent it to me last night, so I got to give it a whole look. And
thank you.
It was, and the cool thing about it is, before even receiving a film, it is described as the genre of horror and fantasy. And you know, first thing when I think of horror, I think of more an Eli Roth type film. And then fantasy is like a Lord of the Rings type film. And how do you feel with this film, Wildling, that both of these genres play into it? Because it's not, you know, as hostile, you know, as Eli Roth hostile, but there is some...
Yeah, there are some dark, strange moments in the film. I mean, you'll definitely be taken to some strange places.
Yeah.
But I personally saw it always as a dark fairy tale rather than a horror or a fantasy or, you know, it was like a fairy tale. You know, that's what I grew up with. My mom always read them to me as a kid.
Yeah.
I was always fascinated with the misunderstood creatures that populate very old myths and fairy tales, and wanted to create my own misunderstood creature, you know. So to me, it was always a fairy tale. It starts with Brad Dourif's character Daddy saying, "Do you want to hear a story?" And it's like a story within a story.
Yeah.
That can also be read as a fable, or, you know, as a metaphorical framework for growing up.
It's almost like I want to say Hansel and Gretel. I feel like there's horror in a Hansel and Gretel type fairy tale.
Yeah.
It's kind of the same thing, you know, when we think about the, anyway, Hansel and Gretel is kind of what I was parallel relating it to. And so for some of our viewers and listeners, can you give a quick synopsis of the film?
Well, I don't want to really spoil anyone.
True.
So, you know, if you haven't already seen the trailer, you know, try to just stay away. Try to see it really fresh. I mean, I personally try to see movies without knowing anything about them.
Cause you don't even like watching trailers.
No, I try to avoid them. It's, you know, it's really the story of a little girl. Her name is Anna. She grows up in captivity. And it's the story of how she becomes a woman. And there's a monster in it.
Yeah.
And there's a daddy in it, and there's a very maternal figure in the movie. The daddy is played by Brad Dourif. The maternal figure is played by Liv Tyler.
Mm-hmm.
And little Anna is played by two different actresses when she's a child, as we see her age and progress. And then for the bulk of the movie, it is Belle Powley, who is playing. Mm-hmm.
And now,
my lead in the movie.
Belle, you know, she isn't as young as she's playing in the film in real life.
She comes across very young, yeah.
She does come across very young. Now, when casting for a character of that age, do you feel it is sometimes, I mean, I guess there is to each their own with this, but to cast someone who is older than that age, or do you like casting someone who is that age of the character? For authenticity, or just, I guess, where their mindset comes from at that age.
Well, you know, those thoughts certainly factor into when you theorize what your casting is going to be like.
Yeah.
But in our case, it was really more of a question of who can Anna be at all? Because it seemed like a very tall order when we had finished the script to find a young actress who can convincingly pull off being a young teenager, but also going through quite a transformative journey in the movie that requires a lot of different things from her, you know, from being sick and being, you know, seeing the world for the first time after she escapes from her captivity, you know, having that wide-eyed sense of wonder.
Yeah.
In experiencing the world, soaking it in, and becoming a woman, you know, and discovering her body, harnessing the strength of her body, embracing what she is, tapping into her sexuality. There's so many facets of her character.
Yeah.
That I was really scared, you know, will we find the right Anna? And then Belle Pally came along, who had done a magnificent performance in The Diary of a Teenage Girl.
Mm-hmm.
When I met her, it was, you know, we kind of clicked, and we were on the same page about what this story is really about on an emotional level, you know? So all other aspects are secondary then, you know, if like you feel there is an emotional connection, like she can relate to the story, she sees what it is, she has the ability to convey what the story should be.
And who the character is really going through, I guess.
Like, I don't even care if she's 18 or 30 or, you know.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Like, she latched onto the
So it's really, material. You could take anyone of any age, really. It just depends on how deep they really actually feel connected to this character or role.
I would say that's the main thing you should be looking out for when you cast a movie, you know.
How was the casting process throughout this pre-production?
Well, I mean, Belle came there on board first because she is the lead. The whole movie is told from her perspective. She carries the whole thing on her shoulders, and she just had to be there first because all other characters, you know, have to function for her, you know. So Liv Tyler came on board next. She responded very well to the script and, you know, saw a challenge there for playing a role that she hadn't, she hasn't done before. And Brad Dourif came on board, who also found a very personal connection. Like, he could relate to the theme of fatherhood that is buried in his character. And so, you know, it's always a gut-wrenching process to, you know, when you know my shooting date is coming near, but I don't have my actors yet, you know, it can be very stressful, I feel like I got really lucky with the whole cast.
And Liv, you were described as, there's a maternal character in the film, and I feel like you got the best of that within the film, and she plays, I think, a great role in being the maternal figure.
Yeah, she's very gentle, she's very nurturing, she has such a beautiful, soft voice.
Yeah.
And I just thought that between Belle and Liv, there was a really beautiful connection.
Yeah.
That is very gentle, you know, and that kind of juxtaposes what happens with Daddy's character, where you have a lot more of the feeling that there's some kind of toxicness in the relationship, or there is a toxic masculinity at work.
Yeah.
You know? But he's a human too, you know, he's not a bad guy.
Yeah.
He's a father who is extremely afraid of having his little girl tap into her sexuality.
Mm-hmm. Which I'm sure, I mean, look, I'm not a dad yet either, but I feel like that's scary for any dad to see their daughter growing up. I mean, even their child, mm-hmm. their child in general growing up, you know, and learning about new things. And obviously high school is a whole nother story from the rest of the life growing up. But, you know, with the synopsis we were given, for the viewers who haven't seen it yet, well, first off, if you haven't seen the film yet, the trailer is amazing for the film, and I feel like a synopsis wouldn't even do the film justice, because it's like you said, you just got to see it. Like how you said you approach movies, you don't see anything beforehand preparing you, and I feel like that's just this film. But because we didn't really get a super in-depth synopsis, what do you think this film would be best related to a dish? If this film were a dish...
Oh, wow. I would say a hamburger.
A hamburger? Okay, explain why, because that's very interesting. I've never got hamburger before.
Well, There's. I'm just saying that because Anna discovers her love for hamburgers in the movie.
Okay,
it's part of the story. You know, when she grows up with Daddy, locked into an attic for almost 16 years, she always gets fed vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
And when she escapes from that attic, she has her first hamburger, and she likes it.
Uh-huh.
So it becomes her favorite food.
That's funny that you say that, because even though she does love hamburgers, I would have gone with falafel, because I feel like there's so many different pieces in a falafel. There's so many different spices.
You're seeing it that way. Okay.
In a falafel. Instead of, you know, it's kind of like Stranger Things too. Everyone could say Eggo waffles, you know? Mm-hmm. But I feel like that's also, there's so many different
The film
pieces.
Has a lot of facets, and that was all by design. You know, it's not meant to be one thing. It's really basically a fairy tale that happens in chapters, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, you know, in the script, there were even chapter marks in it. So there was like a first chapter that only took place in the attic, a second chapter that took place in the human world, a third chapter that took place in nature, and a fourth chapter. And I decided, though, to take out these chapter marks in the film because I felt like, you know, fading in a title in the middle of the movie is a little throwing, you know, like sometimes it can throw you out of the story, and I want it more to
equivalent
to
somebody texting in the theater. You're thrown out.
Yeah. You know, it depends on what type of movie you're making, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if it's Pulp Fiction, it's great to have
these
chapter titles in between. But in this case, we didn't do that. But it's almost like every one of these sections is its own genre in a way, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the thing that ties it together is Anna and her journey.
Yeah. What was your best, that we can discuss, your favorite scene to film? Not I guess, in pre- or post-production to think about or to edit, but on location shoot, what was one of your favorite scenes that we could discuss?
I really enjoyed all the physical things very much, where there's some kinetic moments in the film. You know, I wish I could have done a lot more of those. I really loved doing that, you know. And we were also very much on a limited budget, on a limited schedule with this film. So there was a limit to what we could do. But in terms of performances and working with the actors, there's a scene in the middle of the movie where Liv's character teaches Anna in a bathroom how to shave her legs. And I really enjoyed that scene because there was such a interesting intimacy in that moment. And I thought they both did a great job in that scene.
How many takes did it take for that shot?
Oh, it's a number of shots. We generally didn't do many takes, you know.
Oh, really?
Kind of like Clint Eastwood style, you know, like we didn't have time to do 10 takes or 15 takes. We really had to keep it moving because the schedule was extremely tight. And, you know, Belle was great at that because she had such a great gut feeling and instincts about her role that mostly her first take was already very strong.
Yeah.
And we started calling her One Take Pally on the set. You know?
You almost felt spoiled that she, you know, she's like, she's good with this. Like, we don't need to do any more filming with this shot.
Yeah, you know, it's tough. You're making an indie film with a lot of special things in it, like prosthetic makeup, scenes on water, scenes with animals. You know, you name it, it's all in this movie.
Yeah.
And that means, you know, you have to work fast.
Yeah.
Because these things are time suckers. You know, if you put on a prosthetic makeup, it might take 3-4 hours until the actress is ready. And that goes off from your day, you know.
Yeah.
You know, so when you have her there, you know, you You got to keep it moving.
And speaking of time is fast, how many days did it take for this film to shoot? Like,
we shot 23 days.
23 days.
Yeah.
That's quick.
We shot 23 days in numerous locations in and around New York City.
Okay.
And later on in the editing process, we did a few pickups. And I did, you know, because I couldn't find all the nature things that the film required in New York City or closely around it, I decided to drive to Northern California with just me and a camera and just pick up nature elements that I then used either as standalone shots or as layers in some of the visual effects in the film.
I feel like getting sound after a shot or before a shot, I feel like within the time limit of 23 days, getting the sound between shots, I feel like is really calming. Because I feel like it must have just been a flurry, everything like that. So then when everyone pauses on set for like a solid 2 minutes, everyone, that's almost like meditation on set. Right. Am I right? Because I feel like it was just such a rush. What was some of the, you know, what was one of your best memories while shooting this in such a quick time period?
Well, I was really impressed by how Brad tackled his role. You know, it was incredible to watch him. He's such a veteran, and you know, he, like, one of his first movies was One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest,
and nominee for that.
He was nominated for an Oscar. He won a Golden Globe for it, and he's been in hundreds of films, you know. And he's extremely professional and so in his character. It was just amazing to watch, you know, like there was, if he, if this day he plays a scene where he's really angry, he would arrive on set being really angry.
You know,
he arrived as daddy, did the scene, and, you know, he just has that ability to put himself entirely in the mindset of his character, and he never leaves it. You know, it doesn't, it's not like he takes a break and
Goes to Crafty.
Exactly. No, he stays in that.
How was approaching him on set? Was it different? You know, like you're saying? As said,
it depends on the scene you're shooting. You know, like if we shoot a very emotional scene, he's very emotional. No, it was fascinating. And it was really a great honor for me to work with him because I've been a fan of his for a long time. And
how is it feeling like that? You know, when he finally gets cast and you guys come to an agreement that he's going to shoot this project with you.
Yeah.
Obviously, the feeling is overwhelmed joy, I'm sure. But, you know, what kind of feelings go through your mind when something like that happens? Somebody you admire is, you know, going to be in your film, your first, you know, debut directorial film. How is that going through in your head?
It's incredibly exciting. No, it is exciting. And, it is, you know, I just, as I said, felt really grateful with the cast I got. I felt I got really lucky there. And it was, you know, very rewarding, gratifying experience to see how each of my actors, also Colin Kelly Sordillet, who plays Ray, or Troy Rupdash, who plays the deputy opposite of Liv's character, how they each brought something personal into their performance, you know.
And then now we discussed some of the hurdles, such as budget, you know, shooting within a quick time frame. What were some of the other hurdles that, what was some of the most challenging hurdles that you think could benefit, you know, aspiring directors to just, you know, to say it, hey, we can all relate. Sometimes we all have time restraints. What are some of the most challenging hurdles that you overcame that you can discuss during the whole process of start to finish?
Well, it was, you know, I just tried to use the resources that I had. And I think that's, you know, the best advice for filmmakers. You know, everyone has certain resources, you know?
Yeah.
And so in my case, it was just almost 10 years of doing post-production. So I knew I would be able to tackle the visual effects in the film, and that was very helpful for me, you know.
Yeah.
In terms of challenges, the prosthetic makeup was certainly a big challenge. You know,
is that something you've worked with before?
I had done some prosthetic work before in a short called Moon Man that I did back at film school in Germany. But this was different because it had hair in it also. And nails. It was a little different. But, you know, we could have easily spent three times our entire movie's budget just on prosthetic makeup. Since we couldn't do that, it became a blend of doing a certain amount of base work practically and then applying layers on top of that in digital post-production. So, you know, that became the way to go.
That was going to be one of my next questions, actually, because you had a lot of experience in post-production. What was an asset that you feel like you brought to the table from prior work that you've done? Do you think it would just be your ability to apply, you know, like you're saying, other visual effects that maybe normal, how can I put this? Say a director hasn't been as involved in post-production before. Maybe they were involved mainly in pre-production.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I mean, I wasn't really competing with any other directors, like hunting for a job or something like that. I wrote this script with my friends.
Yeah.
And this was our thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we weren't going to sell it or bring it to someone else. We wanted to do this on our own, you know?
Yeah.
And I wanted to direct this movie. So, you know, I just thought, whatever it takes to get it made, you know?
Yeah.
I'm going to do it. And I was just happy that it all came together, you know, finding the right producers, finding this cast, and then reconnecting with some of the very skilled and experienced post-production crew that I had worked with before, you know? Like, I mixed the movie with one of my favorite sound mixers that I had been working with through over the years, and had a fantastic sound supervisor. You know, we got a lot of support from the company ARRI in Munich, with whom I had worked several times in the past.
Have you worked with IFC before?
No, IFC is this the first time.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that seems like an awesome move, especially for a film this.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like this film plays into exactly what they always produce and come out with.
Mm-hmm.
And what's another film by IFC that you've enjoyed in the past?
I have to say Boyhood.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any particular reason? Or just like...
No, I just, you know, like, just Richard Linklater's... persistence, you know. Like, he's like, him doing this movie for 12 years, it's you know, like, I had 2 years of post on my film, but that's nothing compared what he did.
I remember that film coming out and everyone discussing.
I'm very impressed by that. Yeah,
so that film is, and
it made this film very special, so
top of the list. And the funny thing is, I was thinking about, you know, whenever you film everything, you have extras everywhere, and moving on to editing, the editing process, and you're choosing which shots.
Mm-hmm.
Did you catch any? I haven't actually asked this question ever, but did you ever see anyone doing anything in the background where you're like, that's annoying, why did you do that? Or, you know, some extras are sometimes like flapping a hand or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Did you catch anything that you're like, okay, we can't use this then?
I don't think that we had that many extra scenes, actually. No, we didn't have many extras.
Okay, so there's nothing to even catch.
No, I mean... that was pretty okay. I mean, you know, there's always things that maybe there's this hamster in the background and it's not doing what it's supposed to do, or, you know,
you can't control.
There's always certain things that, you know, you see in the editing room and think, oh man, I wish I had noticed that before. But, you know, for the most part, I was looking very closely what was happening on set. So,
for hamsters, in case.
If there was something not right, you know, I tried to decide there on the spot and say, you know, either I can fix that in post or I'll have to shoot it again.
For those people who are now going to be watching the film, or even that, for people like me who have to rewatch everything, is there something that we can see hidden in the back that, you know, you've placed somewhere? I feel like there's always, like 10 years after a film comes out, somebody's like, I did put something in there, and you can catch it. Are there a couple things like that in several scenes that...
Well,
Easter eggs, I guess we can call it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a group of hunters in the movie, and my production designer, Lauren Fitzsimmons, and the costume designer, Vanessa Porter, they put these little Brotherhood symbols onto the jackets. So I'm wondering if people catch that, because it's kind of a secret society sign that they belong together.
Okay.
And it, we never make a big deal out of it, but if you look closely, they always have those. And then, of course, there's the fun of counting the gummy bears on the birthday cakes.
These are things I wouldn't have thought of. That is so specific.
No, there's some little details, of course. You know, like my favorite detail is actually Brad Dourif's eyebrows. If you see the movie, you'll know what I mean. Mm-hmm. But those are natural. So, they're wild.
And I don't think... Well, I've actually seen natural eyebrows like that, I feel. In real life, quite often. Especially in LA, I feel like we see a lot of interesting things on the daily. Facial features. And so what do you want people to take away most from this film? Do you think it's kind of like reliving one of those child fairy tales once again, even though it's more of a darker fairy tale? But
yeah, I hope the film... makes you remember how it was like going through puberty, you know, and maybe we have young viewers who are actually going through it right now. I think it's a very interesting phase in life. You know, you find yourself sometimes at odds with the world, and it comes crashing down at you. And, you know, sometimes you might feel you're doing everything wrong or the world is your enemy. And Anna's story is kind of an extreme, exaggerated version of that experience.
Yeah, but extreme for sure, yeah.
That is what it is at the core, you know? It's a coming-of-age story. And in that sense, the message of the movie, I think, you know, if you can say that, you know, because it's never outspoken, but try to be who you are, you know?
Like, yeah.
Try to... embrace who you are, embrace your nature, and, you know, that way you can find your freedom and get through that phase.
I like the way you said embrace your nature. With the film, you know, a lot of nature is heavily involved.
The whole film is about nature.
Yeah.
You know, it's about the nature inside Anna. It's about the nature around her versus the civilization around her. It's a theme that runs through.
Yeah. And last question. If you could add... an actor or actress that you really admire were to approach and be like, I need to be in this film, and you can write me any character, whoever it is, who would you want that person to be? Who would you want that actor or actress to be that would approach you to be like, I need to be in Wildling?
In Wildling? Well,
Obviously, you have an amazing cast.
I got my dream cast.
You got your dream cast. You have to add one more.
There is no one more. No, it would be... That would have to be a different film then.
Even a cameo. You don't want to... It could be a cameo. A hot dog vendor on the side of the street.
Well, I'll have Arnold Schwarzenegger walk through the frame as a hot dog vendor. That would be cool.
That would literally be like the chapter separating everything. That would be such a distraction.
It would be a distraction, yeah. No, but... would be cool to have the Terminator walk through the frame.
Oh, yeah. Add some visual effects to it, too, like a metal side.
Yeah, or just Rambo sitting in the background somewhere in the forest, you know?
I love that.
Sharpening his knife.
Just red bandana in the back. Now, this film was just released, and we can catch it in New York and L.A. and video on demand and digital HD.
Right. iTunes, Amazon, all those places.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
And is there anything else that, you know, that we can look forward to in the coming months? I know we're still working on this film and getting it out there in the world. Is there anything else that we're working on?
Well, I'm working on a next project. I can't say what it is yet.
Okay.
We're in the middle of the script process right now. And it looks like it's going to be a gothic... romance. So looking forward to that. And then, you know, with Wildling, if you have friends in the UK, there's going to be a release there this coming Friday, the 20th of April. And there's also some other countries where it will be released. I just heard that there's going to be a good Russian release too.
Oh, that's, yeah, will be
we'll
dubbed.
I think that
would be amazing. I can't wait to hear that.
we'll travel through the world a bit.
Yeah.
Like I heard in Russian, the literal translation is the myth of the beast instead of wildling.
That
sounds good.
Yeah, very fitting. Thank you, Russia. Thank you for your translation.
Yeah.
And then where else can we find you? On social media, on the internet? Is there
Well, I don't do that much social media, but I have a Facebook account. You know, you can hit me up there. I try to respond very quickly.
That's perfect.
Boom. That's it.
Well, thank you for being in the studio, and we'll look forward to seeing this spread to many more countries, as well as the next romance goth film to come soon enough. And thank you for being in the studio. Appreciate
Thanks for having
it.
Thank
me. You so much.
Appreciate it.
Take care, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in. This was AfterBuzz TV's Popcorn Talks. I'm Nick Marty. We'll catch y'all later.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.